The Organic Farming Research Foundation is honored to share a recent conversation we had with Jesse Bowie, president of Olbrook Organics. This interview was created with funding from the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition and the United States Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Keep listening to hear Jesse discuss the challenges and benefits of being an organic farmer in Mississippi, why he believes in the organic standards, and how to get more people involved. This interview was conducted by Thelma Velez, OFRF's Research and Education Program Manager. We hope you enjoy it.
My name is Jesse Bowie. I'm president of Olbrook Organics in Brookhaven, Mississippi. I've been certified organic since 2013, and I'm certified through CCOF, California Certified Organic Farmers.
How long have you been farming?
Now, I've been farming, people always say all their life, but yeah, basically that's it. My father and grandfather, I grew up on a farm, and I guess I can say that the reason I got interested in organic farming in later years is the fact that what we did back then is so much like organic farming now. You always had the chicken manure and the cow manure and all that. And back in those days, you simply, shovel it up, put it on the rows. And now you basically, the processes are the same. You just got more paperwork and stuff. So, but what I noticed that the organic and what we did then was so much alike. And that one of the reasons that I started thinking about organic farming.
Can you tell me more about what you grow on Olbrook? What does it look like producing food on there? How big is it?
I'm certified for 3 acres, and on it, I'm certified for mixed vegetables and melons. I also grow ginger and turmeric and wheatgrass and microgreens. The turmeric takes 9 months to grow. So when I got into that, they made it clear to me I couldn't grow it in Mississippi. And so I said, well, let me give it a shot. I'm going to try anyway. And I have been very successful with the turmeric and the ginger. I also have my handling license, which means the USDA has just certified me to make a certified organic turmeric powder, which I have just brought to the market. And I'm excited about that. So those are mainly my things. So right now I grow squash. I grow French breakfast radish, a yellow mead watermelon, a crimson watermelon. Those are the main things that I'm doing right now.
Did you transition those 3 acres to organic?
When I started Olbrook, we right out of the gate, we were certified organic because I chose an area which had been dormant for 15 to 20 years. So when I approached CCOF, we were able to go through the process and I was certified from day one that they approved it.
Can you give us just a couple sentences on why you farm organically? Why do you commit to this process?
Well, it's a number thing. And I can say the first reason is it really was a continuation of the way I farmed all my life. So people look at organic as being so different from conventional farming, but the basis of the two systems are the same. And so that was one reason. The next reason, I owned a hospice at one point, and the physicians were very serious about no pesticides, no synthetic foods for the patients because their immune systems were compromised. So this and, I guess the last thing was, like I said, it was a challenge to grow crops organically. And the bottom line is there was an economic incentive to do that because the price for organic crops were higher than the conventional.
Were there environmental reasons as well?
I'm going to be honest. when I started out, that was not one of the main concerns because Olbrook Organics is part of a 200-acre farm in which we have timber, 200 acres of timber. We have ponds on it. And so I have worked with Extension Service and NRCS for habitat areas, pond management. So it's been all about the environment all the way. So, that was just a part of the process of taking care of all of this land out there. So in reference to starting Olbrook, that was not one of my, top things. And let me say the other reason is that what I've noticed about organic is that it's really, the focus of it is young people. The young people are the ones who are really, they understand the importance of eating properly. And my other reason, my other last reason for getting into organic was being in healthcare. It's all about prevention. And basically that's what organic is. You eat quality food and you're going to prevent health problems from happening. So that's another reason I got into organic farming.
Can you tell us, you know, more about soil health practices you use?
As a farmer in the southern region, we have a lot of rain, so I'm aware that that's going to cause some leaching problems with and loss of nitrogen. But the way I deal with that is each year I'm going to start with a soil test of the whole area. And the farm is divided up into 8 little square areas that are named OBO1, which is Old Brook Organics 1. I have all of those located. And what I've noticed that even though it's a small farm, there are different soils throughout that small area. And so I realized that the nutrients in those areas, I figured from the start, they probably vary. And once I got the soil samples, I saw that. So what I do is I get a representative sample from each one of those areas. So each year, that's about 10, I get about 10 soil samples to send in for analysis. And once I get that analysis back, that's when I sit down and figure out, okay, which area am I going to deal with? And I use that soil test to then to see how am I going to improve that area that I've chosen to plant in this year. I have to say what crop I'm going to grow in that area. And by doing that, the testing site will say, okay, if I'm saying I'm going to grow corn here, they will sample the soil and make specific recommendations for growing corn in that area. That does a number of things. Many times to bring the whole farm up to a standard to grow a particular crop is very expensive. But so if I'm, instead of making calculations for a whole acre, I can make calculations for a third of an acre. And then I go in and do those calculations to bring that one third area up to the standard so I can grow the crops that I need to grow properly. And like I said, this past year, rain has been a problem. It's been a tremendous problem. It not only has been so much rain, the soil, once you get your soil, you know, get a high organic matter buildup in it, it does what it's supposed to do. It holds the moisture, all of that, but that means you can't get your heavy equipment out there in it. It bogs down. So then I have to switch from going to the big tillers to the hand tillers to try to, you know, to not to let things get out of hand, because the grass is the big issue. And the best you can do in those cases is, you know, take that tiller down the middle of the row and take the grass out as in a manner to try to control that thing until you can get your big equipment in there.
Do you have practices that you employ to try to build up your soil organic matter?
Well, the main thing is I use a compost. It's called Black Gold Organic Compost. I always keep that on hand. But one of the main basic things that I do is mulch my grass and everything. I always just mulch that back into the soil. And I think that practice right there has made the difference in really keeping my organic matter in there. I mean, once I finish a particular crop, if you take all that, put it back into that soil and then come in with a big tiller and grind it up, you know, you're keeping all your nutrients and everything in that same area. You know, just keep it in there, because many times people will rake it out, put it over here, put it in a compost pile. But as much as possible, I like to keep everything where it is and let it decompose. I know we have all of these different low-till, all these different methods. That's great. Old farmers like to kind of stick to the methods that, you know, are proven for them. So I'm aware of them, but I kind of stick to the things that I've been using for 50 years.
What has been one of the most challenging things when it comes to building soil health?
The cost of doing it. I guess that would be the simple answer. Because I'm going to switch crops from one area to the next area, it takes different volumes of nutrients to raise these different crops. So when I decide to do that and get the analysis, it's always some additional inputs that I'm going to have to put because I changed the crop from one area to another area. what I'm thinking is at some point it's going to level out where that's not an issue anymore. But probably that biggest thing now is just the cost of the additional nutrients that you need to do it. You know, organic farming, the common thought process is at some point you won't have to add a whole bunch of stuff. That's what makes organic cost effective, because you don't have to keep adding inputs. But the reality is you will have to add some, but it won't be as much.
The next question is about your high tunnels.
Okay, I have a high tunnel that is 30 by 100 feet, and that's where I grow my ginger and turmeric in there. The issue with that is it's a little different growing in high tunnel, but the reality is, because you're certified organic, you want the environments to be pretty much the same as it is in an open field. I do the same thing. I start off with the soil sample and bring that soil up to standard. And basically, what I'm doing now is one half of the high tunnel is in turmeric and ginger. And then the other half, I will put tomatoes in it or something like that. And then the next year, I will just switch it to the other side. That is not the best cost-effective use of the high tunnel, because ginger and turmeric, once you harvest one of the rhizomes, you can simply break off a piece and drop it back in there. And that you have your start for the next time. But if you have to rotate it, then you can't do that. So I'm probably not going to change from side to side every year, because at this stage of the game in Mississippi, the pests don't know what turmeric is. It's great. I mean, it's a beautiful plant. I don't even see bugs on it because they don't know what it is yet. And I'm going to just take advantage of that right now. And as we continue on. So that's the way I basically, you know, handle the rotation is going from here to the other side over there. And I have a tunnel. The sides roll all the way up. The problem I'm having is I get too much water from the outside running into the high tunnel. That is a big problem, because it's something that I don't have full control over right now. And I'm going to have to divert some of the water that's flowing into the high tunnel around it to make sure that I don't, you know, saturate the crops that I have in there. I've had problems with that this year for the first time, because there was so much rain and I didn't have a trench to divert the water. Like, I don't know if it's a baseboard, but anyway, that water will come in there and you can't control that, and it will saturate. And because it's under that high tunnel, the water won't evaporate very quick. That's problematic. But you just then have to, you know, roll the sides up, and normally it does dry out pretty quick.
Jesse, do you use any cover crops?
Up to this point, I have not, only because I'm trying to go pretty much year round. But the ones that are out in the open, I have a grass that my certifier, we looked at. We're trying to analyze what it is, because it covers it completely. We don't know what it is. You know, my soil is, you know, it stays in place from 1 year to next year. And then I'm constantly going through this process of getting the nutritional value where it's supposed to be. So I'm working it year round. And I guess once I'm comfortable getting it to where I want it to be, then I will start with those cover crops in there.
Can you talk a little bit more about pests?
Thinking about pests, I grow a straight neck organic squash, it's a beautiful squash, but I guarantee you the squash bugs will find it. It's amazing. I don't know where they come from. And the key to dealing with a pest control in my farm is to not to let it get out of hand. There are some approved substances that we can use for pest control, but I think the squash bugs, they love it. They just eat it up. So it is not effective at all. So what I have to do, and this year I had a very successful year. I mean, I didn't see not a single squash bug bite on my squash, because from day one that I planted, and I'll back up here, I go from seed, so raise it in pots until about 3 weeks. And then I transplanted to the field after that. And so immediately when I transplanted to the field, every day or so, I'm going to walk down that row and raise those leaves up and look for eggs or whatever. And that is the best way to control those squash bugs, because once you let that population build, then it's really too late. But if you can keep up with it throughout the whole process, I mean, you will not have a problem. I mean, I didn't have a single problem at all. The few that I saw, I was able to get them and kill them, and I was real successful. So the key to it is it's a labor intensive process. So if you keep up with it from the start, that's the best way to deal with those squash bugs that I have. This is an aside. I grow edible flowers for the pollinators so that they can pollinate the squash. And that's a big problem. That's a big problem. We want to talk about problems with growing. As the year went on and the flowers were gone, the bumblebees were gone too. So for those squash, you know, the production really dropped down because it looked like the pollinators went someplace. I don't know what happened. That's the beauty of organic in that it is, you know, complements diversity. And that's what we need to make this whole process successful.
Can you speak a little bit more about your interaction with NRCS or extension agents that you may have had come out to help you?
For the past 5 years, I've had workshops on the farm where they came out. The whole extension service came. What we would have is we'd put on a program for the extension service, NRCS, the farm service. All of those organizations would come out at one time, and we'd have about 100 farmers. And they would then run down all of the services that they have for farmers. And it's interesting that we talk about NRCS because yesterday I did a talk for NRCS for Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, I think. The organization has really put emphasis on serving organic farmers, and they wanted me to just talk about some of the things that they may do for, you know, they could do to help assist organic farmers. So that was great. But as a my past experience, we've had a lot of dealings with them. As I said, you know, we've got timber, we got ponds. So you got pond management, you got timber that the organizations help out with. For me, when I started out, I needed a high tunnel, which was, you know, that's basic for them to provide for you. The problem was, this is when I was just starting out with my turmeric. I had the turmeric already. I needed the high tunnel then. And so they said, oh, sure, we can do it. The problem is you have deadlines that you have to meet to apply. And when I started the process, they said, oh, you just missed it. It was 2 weeks ago. We'll do it again in September. Well, that wasn't sufficient. That's one thing that I talked about yesterday. So, yes, they have tremendous services, but, you know, the time frame sometimes is not convenient. Also, if you get a high tunnel through them, there are certain things you cannot do in that tunnel. There are regulations which I understand restrict some things that you can't do if you go through them with a high tunnel. But right now, it is my understanding that they're really focusing on the organic farmer.
Did you also mention that you were part of NOSB's board?
Yeah, I served on the National Organic Standard Board for 5 years. During that period, I was a vice chair of crops, and then I was chair of crops, and I was also on the livestock committee and the policy committee. It was truly a tremendous experience. This board controls all inputs, where make recommendations to the secretary for any input into organic farming. It was one heck of an experience. And what I saw was a diversity of people on that board, but the main focus was to make sure that we kept the quality and the standards in organic farming. And that was my thing. And it was a fight, but that's what this is all about. So they were really passionate. I mean, these folks are passionate. They believe it. I won't get into the politics of organic, but the farmers in organic farming are dedicated and they believe in the principles. I can't stress that enough.
What advice do you have for farmers in the southern region who want to build soil health or just get started in organic farming?
Getting the farmers in this area started in organic farming is, you know, how to do that is a million-dollar question. And I say that because since I have become certified organic, I have not met anybody else in Mississippi who was certified organic. That's the reality. I think it's great, but for some reason, there are misconceptions out there that people are not, they're not taking that step. And I've done everything to, you know, show people the process that you go through, that it's not difficult, that particularly my certifier is willing to assist in whatever is needed to do it. I just don't have the solution to how we're going to get more people involved. I keep working at it every year, but I don't know.
Can you share some advice for farmers?
Well, the main thing is that what we're doing is it's a tremendous calling, it's needed. And during these troubled times, we're going to have to just do everything we can to survive, because in addition to just the issues with raising the crop, we're also dealing with issues in the market in which we many times are not getting the price that we need for our produce. That's a really big issue. And for small farms like me, you know, we can't get to the big markets. And so we have to deal with the smaller local markets, which is good. Local is the name of the game, but everybody wants to get to the big market. But when you compete in that market, you really don't get the value of the crop, because they're going to price you down. You know, here's a conventional squash, for an example. Here's organic squash. And it has definitely been my experience that, and I'll give you for an example that I'm dealing with right now. And I better not call the name of this big box organic store. Their squash is $2.79 a pound. And so what I do is use that value to discuss with the people that I'm selling to say, in this store, it's $2.79 a pound, but I can sell mine for $2 a pound. Realizing that if I would sell it to them, if they sell it for $2.79 a pound, that I would get something less than $2. So it works out for me when I can find those kind of relationships. So those are the kind of issues we're dealing with that I think are going to be more difficult unless we can keep our price that we have for producing the product, you know, keep that as low as possible, because the market is going to keep it down. Even though what I've seen is customers for organic, they will pay the price because they understand the importance of what went into it. And I'd say that organic symbol, that's what it's all about. When I see that USDA organic symbol, I mean, I'm proud to be able to put that on my product, because it means that we have done everything we were supposed to do in raising that crop, and it is what it is.
I asked about challenges, particularly in the South, that you face in Mississippi. Yeah. And you talked a lot about rain, but I didn't hear you mention heat.
What I have learned is, now I have a drip irrigation system, and the heat is just bad on me. If you get that irrigation system in place, and I got timers on it where you water it in the morning, you can make those crops produce pretty good. In the past, I did not do that. And sure enough, the tender vegetation would get up 2 or 3 inches or so. And in one day, you can burn it up if you don't have that moisture in there to keep it going. So yes, this year, a combination of the heat and the moisture has been a big problem. But I have done better this year, because early on, when the heat was bad, when you transplant your crop to the field, that's the most sensitive time for the heat to, you know, destroy your plant. So if you can keep that plant moist and make sure it's really tough, you could get it to a size where you can deal with the heat and the water. So that's the key to the whole thing. So to answer your question, you can be successful with the heat and the water. It's a process. You have to coordinate the watering and the hardening of the plant to the point where it can then deal with the heat that it's going to get later on.
Do you take the plastic off of your high tunnels at any point?
Well, first of all, I can't take it off, but the sides will roll all the way up to about 8 feet, all the way around. So you can pretty much open that thing completely up, and it will completely dry out if it's not raining constantly. That's the only thing. I'll be honest, this is the first year where it stayed moist too long, but you don't need to take the whole top off if the sides will come all the way up. And be taller than I am. So the sides of my high tunnel are about 10 feet, and it completely allows to dry it completely out.
Jesse, is there anything else you want to share with us about your farm, your operation, yourself, your background, organic in general?
The beauty of organic for me is the product is what it presents itself to be. No pesticides, no synthetic fertilizers. It represents adherence to some standards. And I guess having been military and all that, I like that kind of stuff. I'm so confident with the radish that I grow that I will go out in the field, pull it up, and just eat it right there. Because I know the standards that I'm going by. You know, people laugh, say, oh, you eating the dirt. Yes, I am. It may be crazy, and they say you're crazy. But because I know I'm adhering to the standards, I'll do that. I can do that. That's what I want to say about that. And that we in the in the business really need to be about doing whatever it's going to take to get other people involved in it. I don't have the solution to how that's going to happen, but we need to figure it out.
Thank you, Jesse.
OFRF would like to thank Jesse Bowie and Olbrook Organics for sharing their story. This interview was created with funding from the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition and the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. OFRF thanks these and other funders for their support.